Welcome to Course in Miracles. Everybody, this is Lonnie from San Jose.
Hi. Yay. How are you? I wanted to come over here. There's so many great things about this group.
He's a longtime Course student. Beautiful soul, takes it very seriously. I'm really lucky to have him here.
Well, he's very complimentary. He's not really a beginner. I've been doing this a lot of years, but off and on, you know.
He's an advanced beginner. A humble, advanced beginner. Welcome to Egos Anonymous.
Egos Anonymous?
This is Egos Anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we're a little different than the other anonymous group. We have 360 easy-to-follow steps. Here to get over our addiction to the ego. It's, one of these phrases from that. We quickly deny that we're acting out of our ego. And our denial leads us into a false sense of confidence. But the ego addiction just shows up. And if you ignore your addiction, it comes back even stronger. If you pretend that you are so peaceful, even though you really think you should be angry, you should be getting your fair share, you should be attacking. After all, you've been attacked. If you're denying that, you need a miracle. You need Egos Anonymous. You need A Course in Miracles. If you're denying that you walking around in a body is the best possible thing that you can do with your mind, you need a miracle. You need Egos Anonymous. If you are not supremely each day with a higher elevated experience, happy. Each day makes yesterday less. And you may fully anticipate tomorrow will be more happy. If this is not your curve of existence, you need a miracle. You're denying the truth of what you are. And your eyes, your spiritual eye, is closed to where you are. And your ego eye has been informing you about what you are and where you are. You need a miracle. You need A Course in Miracles. Welcome to Egos Anonymous. So tonight, we're going to look at a very interesting word that's got a little baggage. It's always good to be take these words and have some heat and maybe cool them down a touch. Let A Course in Miracles redefine them. And as usual, we will use this word to bust the ego. To wake you up. A little bit of awakening happens every time. So the question for tonight is, what is holy? What does that mean? Holy. Let's just take a look at it. Before we go around the room, does anybody want to answer what happens to you when you are approaching something that's holy? Lonnie, what happens
to you? It puts me in touch with my relationship to God.
Mm. Wow. It's like a connection. It's like a relationship.
Makes me aware of that. Gets me out of my body. Wow.
And before you are exposed to whatever it is that may or may not be holy, I like what you said. It puts you in connection with your relationship right then. Okay. That just means it's happening in you, regardless of what's about to come from the outside of you.
Yeah.
Something in you is triggered.
Right, in me.
Yes, that's a quality. Chris.
Yes, falling and experience something holy when my mind body falls away. Mm-hmm. And there's just the sound of presence. I just experience.
My mind and body fall away. and there's an openness and a presence. Well, that means suddenly that there's no receiver. You don't, mind and body, step aside for what I'm about to experience. Doesn't fit in the body. Nice movement. David, what's something that holiness has? What's about holiness?
Well, if I go back to my past holiness, my religious break was, I'd have this great reverence for something, but I had no clue what they were talking about, really, what it was. You'd have to be reverent.
Ooh, yeah.
And now it's, you know, but I have no clue about
yes.
what.
It just, yeah.
You know, now it's like the whole is me becoming whole again.
Mm-hmm.
All this is coming back together, like I'm seeing where, oh, it's always been there, kind of like. So now I can have a little, I still have the reverence, but I know what it is I'm becoming whole. I'm going back to that God self, and it's, you know, becoming whole. I'm getting rid of the
respect for the big picture.
Yeah, exactly.
Reverence is respect. The whole is the big picture.
So whatever it was back then, I'm finally figuring out what it was.
Nice.
Yeah.
They weren't all wrong.
Yeah.
Nice. Nice. Stefan.
It's one. So holy. It's one. It's undivided.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in alignment, but that's only.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, like, it's, you know, it's peaceful. It's pure.
That's one. And the word holy comes from holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y. It's this Latin root for a description of the whole piece, the whole enchilada. The holy is one. It's indicative of one.
I think it's really beautiful what you said, like, if I go, oh, that's holy, or I get a sense that that's holy, first it's there, like that, but then it starts to, like, resonate within me.
Yeah, I like what Chris said.
And it's like, and it starts to have, like, a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty soon the regular world goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So, very amazing.
Nice. Yeah, it's got this revelation, has an experience that goes with it. Lonnie, what's...
So simple, too, isn't it?
Huh.
It's so simple, it's not complicated.
It's simple.
When you see something that you feel it's holy, it's just it's a simple connection.
Ah, yeah.
You know, it takes away all the complications of life.
And
so I think of it as...
Yeah, simple.
It's very simple, and it reminds me of that... So in some way, it reminds me of that, what maybe... our relationship with God is all about. It's so simple, you know.
Automatic.
It's like going home. Sometimes spiritually, it's like going home, like part of home.
Nice. Yes. Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Back at the factory, they have all the right tools to receive whatever you're bringing back. And
yeah.
They understand everything about you.
It's almost like, you know, put it in a worldly. It's like comfort food.
Very
for your spirit.
Yeah. See, I like that. Simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, something simple. Holy is simple. It's not complex.
You don't have to figure it out.
Yeah.
For some reason, you understand it.
Yeah.
You understand the feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, something unholy can be very complex and tricky, and something holy is not tricky.
Yeah. It just seems very, just there. You feel it. It has a feeling to you. It's probably, sometimes it's hard to verbalize what it means, other than the fact that it's like you've been there before. It's like something in your spirit tells you that this feels like home.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Beyond journey beyond words.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. Yeah,
yeah. And like Chris said, you know, you really have to put your body and your mind aside, because they're not made out of holiness.
Yeah,
they don't fit. That's really great,
yeah.
Julie.
For me, what came up was the attributes of God, primarily because I was in a situation, a really difficult conversation, that I felt like I was in holy ground even, or sacred ground even, like in this super difficult conversation, but it just, it was just like the realization that only now, so thank you for this question of like the attributes just started flying through my mind, and it's like each one of those applied to that situation, and no wonder it felt like the sacred ground. Like I didn't show up with all the reactions I would normally have had. Mm-hmm. It was gentle, it was open, it was honest, it was just all of these things. And I even remember that I, feeling like I was not, even in the moment I realized that I wasn't the one in charge. It was something greater than me that was sort of like there. So.
Nice. You know, something about those, she's talking about the Manual for Teachers, the 10 Attributes of the Teacher of God and the Manual for Teachers. Anybody who hasn't read the Manual for Teachers, jump in, it's 100 pages. You don't have to wait till the end of the book, just do it. Great definitions for beginners especially. I mean, don't worry about the title, go for it. Interesting aspect about the 10 Attributes of the Teacher of God is it's a very, very all-encompassing, to me, an intelligent description of truly loving. Loving. Well, love is, you know, trustworthy, trusting. It's honest. Mm-hmm. Love is gentle. Love is joyous. Love is patient. Mm-hmm. Love is defenseless. Defenselessness. Love is generous. Love is faithful. Love is open-minded right away. It's tolerant easily. Of course, love. Wow. It's such an intelligent take. And that would be holy, would it feel just that way. Very loving. And there are the 10 aspects of love. Nice. Well, what is it? If something's holy, what?
Complete. All-encompassing. There's nothing outside of it. We're going back to what Lonnie was referring to, unconditional. There aren't any conditions attached to it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Complete and free.
Free. Simple.
Yeah. Simple. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to strive for anything. Mm.
Mm. Yeah. The holiness flows because it's so complete and so informed. It just flows naturally. Instantly. Not blocked. Fully available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's holy. Mark?
Well, I don't really know what it is. I don't know what holiness is, but I can describe times when I feel like something, when I may have been in the presence of it. Mm-hmm. And it could have just all been my mind playing a game with me, thinking that, you know, I had reached some state that is just, I made it up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there have been time, you know, we did a 6 day or 5 day silent retreat one time, and, you know, after meditating for, you know, hours, something, you know, like a resonance with something that seems like much greater and awe-inspiring and mysterious and just something that you can't describe, but you can feel it, like, viscerally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that is,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that's why I keep coming here.
Mm.
You know?
Nice. Yeah, something greater, something more all-encompassing, like this wholeness that Walt was talking about. It's when you're exposed to it, it doesn't have edges, and it just seems to flow anywhere. It's greater. I mean, you run out of words very quickly. You run out of words very quickly, because words are definitive.
Yeah, when you describe it, then you lose the connection.
Isn't that a fact? Holiness defies description. In fact, description is not holy. That's great. I say that's a fact. Like, that's a fact. Asako.
Well, first of all, I want to say what's not holy. It's my judgment.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that's unholy. So, you know, when I think in terms of spirituality, I always have to bring it into my consciousness. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll be floating in the universe, you know, you'll be floating in some object. So, so for me, holiness is a state of consciousness where I feel totally connected, totally in oneness with everything. Okay, I'll physically see what I see, which is space between me and him and the ground, everything. But those are it's not relevant.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in that state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think Walt said another part is the experience of whole, which mm-hmm. is really limiting again with words, but there's oneness, there's wholesome, perfection, and beauty and grace.
Mm-hmm. I like how you started. I like you started with saying, well, hey, let's all stay real here with our feet on the ground. You have to speak from your perspective. And like Mark says, you know, well, you come out of your perspective a bit. This is part of the interesting thing about holiness. But bringing it back to what you said, I think that holiness meets you where you are. Where you are, with whatever situation you are. If you're willing to open your mind at that point to these 10 attributes, if you're willing to open your relationship to the divine, with whatever situation you have going on, the expansiveness will occur at whatever rate you can absorb at that time. And meditation is a great way to turn on the, raise the antenna and start turning the tuning the radio to KGOD. Which is much better described as something like, you know, a radio wave that's absolutely everywhere and completely invisible than it is a man with a gray beard who's got rules. The Course in Miracles throws that entire concept out.
That is one of the things. And for me, holiness, it could be total elation. It could even be sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could be anything.
Mm-hmm. Anybody ever had a sweet sorrow? Mm-hmm. Where it's only because of your love that you feel so sad? Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Sweet, deep, deep feeling of love that brings a sense of sorrow.
So beautiful that you cheered.
It's so beautiful.
You overflow.
You overflow. Doesn't fit. Doesn't fit in your body, so you overflow. Donna, what makes something holy?
Well, when you were guiding us along, of course, I did think about objects. I thought about sacred objects and, mm-hmm. and you know, how I would, if somebody says, well, we're going to see a sacred relic or a sacred
yeah.
holy object, you know,
yeah.
how my mind might back up and start defining, well, what is that going to be?
Yeah.
And I'm appreciating bringing back this idea or this knowing that it's so available, because where I went was my experience of moments where there was that profound, it was a profound holiness, because Chris was saying this, that I wasn't there. And it's like there was nothing, the thought, the feeling was there. There was nothing that wasn't holy. Everything is holy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like a quality of love there, but it was like there was also a quality of mystery where, mm-hmm. like, this never ends. It's mm-hmm. like eternity. It's just mm-hmm. outside of everything. So that,
I love what you said there, is that in the presence of holiness, your perception opens up, your limits fall away, and the holiness is everywhere, and that openness defies what's normal for the body. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, something greater for sure. Chris, what makes something holy?
I'm thinking about the kinds of conversations sometimes I get in where it doesn't matter who's talking. There's something that you couldn't imagine in your thinking mind that you're communicating, that there's something magical, or not magical, but miraculous about, well, who's, doesn't matter who's sharing it, it's that you're both, I don't know.
Transcendent.
It's that the conversation is transcendent.
Yeah.
That, well, maybe that's a limited view of it, but it feels holy to me.
Because it's,
because it's bigger than either of us could have put into words or something, but it's...
Yeah. That's why I like with Julie, these 10 things Julie points out in the back of the book. They're so intelligent. I've never seen a more pithy, inclusive description of love in my life. Back of the book, Manual for Teachers, starts on page 9 or 10. Can I get 9 or 10 in? Yeah.
Oh, that.
Yeah, you know, I was on a, I don't know, a third date or something, and I actually had the girl at my house, and the girl says, we were talking, she says, well, you know, what is love anyway? I said, well, love is, and I just, boom, all 10 of those babies. I was cooking for her at the time, you know, I said, well, love is, you know, it's trusting, and it's honest, you know, love is honest, of course, and when you're love, you've got this ability to be tolerant, because, you know, I just go on and on, I'm cooking, right? I turn around, she's, yeah. That's just like the new standard.
Quite a meal.
On a date, yeah.
Did you
have
the fourth?
That was fun. Yeah. I did.
Okay, good.
It's amazing. Those ten attributes are, this is a description of love. The long and the short of it.
I like what you said, Chris, because to me, like when you, what I heard out of that was, it's something that's being shared. You're really sharing at the point where it's just sharing. If it's holy, it's a shared experience. It's one and the same. It is one. And like we've been in the class with that, the truth is something that we all can maybe see something differently. I don't know, but there's really one there, and that's very different than the world or my own little head.
Yes,
it's like if it corresponds to me, it's going to correspond to you. We correspond to each other. If it's somehow, and there's a journey, and that's a beautiful journey when you're actually communicating to where you're doing it. We got a holy sharing. It's just going on. It doesn't.
You're reflecting it, cooperating. It's speaking through both of you at the same time. Yes.
One thing that's being.
Yes.
So that's really kind of beautiful.
It's beautiful that way. Very interesting how shared it is, how this oneness is shared. Yeah. Kim, what's holy? How do you know it's holy? How do you know if it's holy?
Oh, I don't know if I can add to what everybody said. I love the very first thing that you said, Chris, about your mind and body just falls away and you just know. Mm-hmm. I've had that experience many times. And I've had the experience of being in conversation with somebody and absolutely knowing these were not my words coming out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. Because it's not anything I would have said or thought of. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many experiences through painting that of things that I know just didn't come out of me. And but I think anything that I was thinking, if it has any aspect at all of duality or judgment or could be used in any way to bring any kind of separation from in anything, then it's not holy. So it can't do anything like that, but it just is that knowing you have just been reminded of what you are. It's that getting through the layers of the shadows and all the history and everything that we have built up with our ego to get to the light inside of us, that's what holy does. It gets to that core and reminds me what I am.
Beautiful. Holiness, witnessing holiness is personal.
Very.
Ha! So personal. Wow, that's good. Yeah. Pam, what's holy?
Such a booming question. I feel like everything everybody said, it's just like, wow. You know, the words, for me, it just, like, the whole contrast creates clarity. Raised so Catholic, been to 10,000 masses, and the whole, and the word holy, I was just struck with my experience of the word, and most of my life, it's like, holy's over there. Holy's that statue, or that relic, or that stick, or that bone, or Lord's, or whatever. And so it's almost like there's this reverence and this deep humility combined with the feeling of, because you're not it. That is, you have to work at it. You're still guilty, you're this, you're that, you know, all that stuff. But it wasn't until, like, those feelings, the genuine experience of it. While you were talking, I was reminded of, has anybody been in a busy European city on a really hot day, and then you go to a cathedral and you walk in, and it goes from, like, there's hats for sale and popsicles and everything else, and tons of people in lineups and everything, and then you walk in and the temperature drops 15 degrees, and it's like huge and quiet, and you realize this was inspired by, like, a human experience that has, it couldn't have anything to do with all that. That was awesome. There's that awesomeness of stepping into something that you can feel, that as much preaching as you can sit through doesn't bring it, didn't bring it, you know? You're just always saying, well, I'll never be worthy, so, you know? But then holiness is, it's the truth of who, it's the remembering the truth of who you are. And through this, you, it's like you get that experience whenever you want. You are that experience. But it's interesting how I feel like it's been a big word in my whole life, but it's had such different vibes. You know, like different as a child, and different as a teenager, different as a young adult, and now it's like, oh, now it's a whole blessed experience, whereas before it was like homework. You know? Now it's like, oh, this is the truth of who I am. Not this unattainable, guilt-laden reverence that's like, oh, I've got to, you know, put on the cloak and all that stuff. It's like, holy is the truth of who we are.
Nice. And I like it because you're coming from the obvious standpoint of most of the time, it's not who we are.
Right.
Holiness is out there. But in those glimpses of holiness, when you're actually going in the presence of holiness, there's a surrender.
Right.
Your own surrender, your own little, the Course dances around this with using the word humility.
Yeah.
You have to become humble in the presence of holiness, because most of the time, your ego is really grandeur, you know, all these great ideas of how it doesn't need holiness. It's got a better plan. But in the scope and scale, the reverence of what we're talking about, your ego has to take a back seat, sit down. You're not the star of the show here. Very powerful.
Yeah.
Who you really are.
Yeah.
Beyond.
And you know what I was thinking too, when you were talking about the church, going into the church, that when we are on this journey, we are sponges to goodness, I think.
That's good.
And so when we walk into a place like that, we absorb it.
Sure. You feel the truth.
The goodness
and
the spirit of that goodness just hits us, like, you know, I don't think it would hit people that aren't on this journey. It's not to say they're not on their own path, but they're maybe not as far along as we are. I don't like to pigeonhole it with a description, but know what I mean? But we are just impacted by that. I mean, I can remember when you said that, because I grew up Catholic school, Catholic church, having incredible experiences in a church that had a lot of really good and a lot of really bad in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's, so, again, it's like that contrast creates
contrast.
Clarity.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not to say that it was all bad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I had high times in Mass in sixth grade, you know, where just singing and going, you know, and feeling the love of that. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of other sides of that that wasn't so, you know, we all have that experience, I think. But isn't religion interesting how all of them have these, you know, sort of like very concrete ways of making it just a little separate. Mm-hmm. And so in that too, it's just don't have to step into a church, don't have to consider anything holy because it's the meaning you give it. But no, this is holy. This bread is holy because that man said a few words and was wearing this crazy cloak. It's like, what? But
somebody said that, I forget which sage it was, it said that that enlightenment, you can't force enlightenment to happen. It occurs, when it occurs, it happens like an accident. But having a spiritual program and training your mind makes you accident prone.
Oh, I like that. That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
And like Kim said, you know, you go into the church and you absorb because your mind is open to it. And I had the same experience. Salisbury Cathedral in England, I was just touring and I went through those doors and I took a deep breath. It was like...
Yeah.
It's so tall in there. It's so still. It's so beautiful. Everything just lifts up. Every piece of architecture goes straight up hundreds of feet.
Yeah.
And there was nobody else in there. And it was like, this is free. And it was built, hard built, over a long, long time ago, and for a long time remained.
Yeah.
All in a celebration of this idea.
Yeah.
Of higher.
And a bunch of humans got together and made those.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the inspiration of it all and the way the rocks, the steps are... like this now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like
there's
this deep truth that's behind all that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and it just when you were talking about like stepping into holy, I was thinking of those moments where you're going from like, you know, shot glasses and t-shirts to like quiet and deep and like ooh, it's just, and we can do that just in our hearts.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It's sure, interesting though, when you were saying that before, when you went to church, you used to feel this reverence and you felt like it was coming from the, but it's actually coming from you.
Right.
And do they teach you that it's coming from the relic and it's not coming from you?
Oh, I mean, it's it's very conditional.
Yeah, they do, huh?
It's very conditional.
Well,
yeah, it's very.
They don't say it like that.
No,
it's
subtle. It's subtle, but it's like you better be worthy.
I think the words were, you're a sinner, but if you come here, we'll try to help you and do some of that.
You got a tithe, you got a this, you can't have it forbidden.
Talk to the man and you'll be forgiven.
Yeah. Well, I remember going to synagogue when I was little and, you know, they pulled the Torah out of the ark, you know, and they, you know, there'd be a procession of, you know, old men with beards going around the synagogue, and everybody, you know, there was like this feeling of, wow, that thing is really important.
Yeah.
And I want to be near it because it's so important.
Yes.
And there's this feeling of reverence for that thing, but it's actually the feeling of reverence is you.
Yeah. That's it.
Right,
back to what Kim said, the more you have, the more you can experience.
Yeah. But there's that permission that somehow is...
You can only feel that until that thing comes out of it.
Yeah. The permission is...
Well, it's closed today.
Yeah. But you ate meat on Friday. So, not today, sorry. You don't get to go to communion this week. Sorry, no bread for you.
You know, it's interesting. It's like a thirst, isn't it? I mean, you know, you could be out in the middle of somewhere and there you see a fountain and then all of a sudden you're able to get some water and it fills that thirst. Mm-hmm. Or you're hungry and you go to the restaurant and you get something and fills that. And then you walk in here and you're saying, well, I'm not really filling my body, but why do I feel this way? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so maybe in some way it's hitting something that's not physical. Mm-hmm. It's hitting that spiritual part.
It's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting. It's filling that part. I think that's why sometimes in the architecture why it's so large, because it's greater than us.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they made the cathedral so big. Mm-hmm. You could be in the middle of the redwood forest and feel the same way and say, you know, God created this, you know. Mm-hmm. And yet, what's interesting, it can be there. It's so huge. You really think about it. It is so huge. It should be frightening. but it's not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, it seems like it's not when it's when you're in that state. It,
You because know. It's so personal.
Yeah.
I think is why it's not frightening.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
You're involved. It's you. You are involved. It's not outside.
You with it and nothing else.
And it's all meant for you.
Yeah.
But the ego's like, it's like a prison. You got bars, and you want to keep yourself. I mean, this is an experience of duality.
Yeah.
Trying to keep that free spirit within me somehow controlled, or somehow I want to be the rider of the horse. Part of me knows that I'm just a rider, and this horse is spirit. But that feeling, like, it's a little beyond, seems beyond the control. To walk into a church, all of a sudden your walls are way out there in the physical world.
Yeah.
Sounds are different. This is a different experience.
Yeah.
But that part of when you feel like struggling with myself, I'm keeping this limitless being. Somehow I'm not experiencing its limitless. I'm scared. I'm trying to keep something hold here. Right? I'm like a jet aircraft. I'm at full power. The only thing holding me on the ground are the blocks holding the wheels. But there's a... Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a little bit of a tug, a war with me, because there's fear sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying to experience that holiness is to be free of those. Mm-hmm. And then that yearning of, I want to be whole, I want to feel that wholeness, mm-hmm. becomes like, wow, that's what I was saying. And that's like, how to get back to center and know that things are unfolding in a way that I want to cooperate with that.
So with an unholiness feels like fear. I like that, because Julie says the holiness feels like love.
Can I throw something? As long as you don't hit any of us.
Yeah.
Well, I hope it doesn't hit any.
No dishes.
Why don't I just not?
No, you can go this way. Go for it.
I'll shut you down if it's inappropriate. Okay. I'll say thanks. Let's talk later.
Okay. Well, he's never. You know when? So, like, okay. So when I go to a place like a mission or something, I can feel the suffering there. It's not like I'm afraid of it, but it's like a poem tied to a tree, as Ralph talked about. And I'm asking how you respond with, I mean, it's a state of mind to be there without fear, for sure. And I know that can be healed.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean...
Chris, it works like this. When you are in a place where you can feel suffering, especially where suffering is collecting, like in these institutions, you will notice there are people there who do not seem to feel like you. People who will probably turn their life over to it. They are not feeling the suffering as much as they are feeling the call for love, and they are overflowing with a desire to answer. So what happens with this book is we learn in chapter 4 or 5 about this relationship between suffering, and what's really going on is that this is the absence of love. That there's no such thing as suffering, no such thing as loss, turns out. What there is a desire for fullness, because we know that is of what we are. We are full. We are. There is love. There is wholeness. There is goodness. We're not feeling it. And it can be very ugly. But this book redefines it and says there's no such thing as sin, there's no such thing as loss.
But I'm... So can I just...
Yep.
So there was this place up on Sky Island Boulevard where something awful had happened. Mm-hmm. You could walk through this area and feel it. Well, the Native Americans and this Buddhist teacher got together and they healed that. It's radically different now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is a way to put, I'm sorry.
There's no limit. There's no limit to your mind. Take that example and know that they're no different than you. I don't know how many of them it took. 6 or 8 of them? I don't know. Only takes one.
But really, how beautiful, Andrew. How many times do you talk about our greatest, like you have to say for me, our greatest fear, holy instant becomes our greatest joy.
Yes.
So when something has all that negative, and whatever you want to call it,
yep.
that energy there to bring that spirit, that light there, to change that.
The power potential
becomes
the great. The darker it is, the more horrific it is, the more power is present. Make no mistake here. The same power that would make evil, it turns out, the same power that would make evil makes the awareness of love.
I had that experience when I visited the battlegrounds of Gettysburg.
Yeah.
Wow. It was intensely awesome. Mm. And I mean that in the awe word. Mm. It was amazing, you know. Yeah. It was just grass when I saw it, but I mean you could feel the history and the pain and the love at the same time.
I dug up a wedding ring when I was visiting there.
Oh, wow. Did you?
Yeah, some old ring. I had no finger in it. Nor happened to that. Yeah.
So to get a slice or a peek of that, like that victory, that plan, to see like something unfolding in plan, where something like Gettysburg, anything, is part of something. I mean, that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, the same plan for myself, to see something beautiful in what I a second ago couldn't see.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. That opening. Yeah. That's that journey. That's mm-hmm. something beyond oneself. That's like
beyond.
Yeah.
Beyond. Sharon, what's holy?
I have a hard time with that word because I'm with Pam on that one. But is divine holy?
You tell me. It's all. This is your world, man. we're listening to you. You're teaching us.
I don't know. It's a lightning word.
What happens to you when? Have you had that experience? Where you thought?
No, I've experienced some things that I can't even explain. But I mean, just
anything you might call holy.
Yeah, sick, simple stuff.
I mean, okay.
Just real simple, like music.
Oh, yeah.
It transcends.
It transcends.
You feel a part of the world or something greater. I can't explain it.
It transcends. I like that.
Or just if you're, like, just simple things like the field of grass is just blowing. It doesn't mean anything. It has that quality that I don't know why. Mm-hmm.
In you. You're looking. You see. You hear the music.
Yeah, I guess.
What happens to you?
I don't know. I just feel joy, I guess. Connected. Love. I'm not really sure.
The hell is that? Something, though.
Something.
What the hell is that?
Yeah. No, like yeah. Vivaldi. Or yeah. I mean, something just that's just amazing.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like a lot of it's like your mood. If your mood's in a girly, girly, girly mood, continues more. I have a question though. So from what I'm hearing, places can have a collective energy. I mean, I'm sorry, the like, basic stuff, but I mean, so places can have a long history of collective.
Okay, so let me answer that. So when there is an experience of collective energy, it's the same thing as auras. Some people can see auras. You know, and what that is that particular person has a perception ability, if you will, and it's sensing. It does not mean they are holy. It does not mean they are unholy.
No, just.
But yeah, there is no limits to the flavors of experience in your mind, and okay. We are in your mind, and you are a character in your mind. What you've given yourself is what you have. You're not better or worse or more or less, and we all got the same potential.
Because if it's true, because like I had walked into a church, and they didn't have like the hawking people outside. I mean, I've gone to a church. It's just like, and for some reason, it's the quiet. It's the sound of quiet, of mass quiet. I think that really takes you down. It's just, and right. You know, and it does give you pause.
Uh-huh.
But I think that pause is what it is. It's just that.
Gives you pause. I love that. How about that? Gives you pause.
But that's the break of, oh, yeah, this is real. Everything else is kind of silly. it doesn't, I mean, it might not be very long that you're there, but... Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget those moments when I walked in that cathedral. It was like, I was so lifted.
Yeah.
It was designed to do that. All the hundreds of people, thousands, I don't know, over the hundreds of years, one of the kings, Henry the something or other, they wouldn't let him build this church downtown. So he went out in the field and says, we're building it here and now. Anybody in? A whole bunch of people were in. And they built this amazingly huge cathedral. Tall, tall, tall. He says, higher. A little higher.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that'll do. I feel it now. And I was like, you going there? I felt it. So now, I went to the Great Pyramid of Giza. Same thing. I went down to, because Egypt, I'm a little fascinated about Egypt. I have an Egyptian t-shirt too, because I'm a nerd on that. And I thought, whoa, this is going to be so cool. I can't wait to get into this. Or, you know, and I climbed in. And they, at the time, it was during this Egyptian political issue, and they were shooting each other. And so there, nobody else there. I went into that freaking thing myself. I mean, these huge, huge pyramid. And I crawled all, went in, walked in the great job, into the back, into the hole, into this deep sarcophagus room that's been hidden and blocked and everything else. And boy, it just felt like somebody's private home. I mean, it felt like I was invading somebody's privacy. I'm just telling you how it felt. It felt that way. You know, but that could be all in my head too, right?
No, I can see that.
It's totally opposite of that cathedral. The cathedral was open and welcome and free. Please come and get lifted. That is somebody's private tomb and they're hoping to get into the afterlife. Please don't steal my stuff. This really would be written on the wall, but they're trying to hide everything so they wouldn't know where to... This is not the door. Don't come here. Yeah, amazing.
But there's something about immensity. I mean, it's like if you go and stand and look at the ocean, you know, just the grandeur of the ocean, you know, you know, looking out to the horizon and how big it is, and you can see that the kind of the curvature of the earth, and you sense that, you know, like we're on this thing that's rotating out in the middle of the universe, you know, or you go into the forest, you know, and you know, huge redwood trees, you know, and it's so overwhelming.
Yes.
That it does make you like pause, makes you like your mind stops your mind for a moment.
I love that pause work.
Yes. Yeah, yes. You know,
doesn't fit. Doesn't fit in everything you know.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing about the there's a timelessness.
Yes.
I think.
Nice. Yeah, I love that word beyond too. The beyond.
Yeah, the natives would they would call them like holes in the ground, certain spiritual places or windows.
Yes.
And you go to these places and you would just get, it was like way easier. Sort of like when you go to church, some things are really easy to do because it's so much spiritual stuff happens there that it kind of like amplifies it a bit.
Yes, indeed. And also your willingness, you put yourself in a state of mind. You're kind of expecting this to be blessed or sacred ground, and then you're more sacred. You're blessed.
Yeah, these places, it's not the place, there's something about that. There are no distractions, and they allow you to fill that space.
Nice, Walt. Yeah. Nice.
You become aware of how big you are, and how holy.
Nice.
But the space facility, you know, the physical space,
because all the vendors were held outside.
Right.
Yeah, like the noise is held outside.
All the distractions.
It's nice. Yeah, it's nice.
You do that in living room, sitting on the floor, and getting quiet.
Isn't it true? Isn't that a wonderful discovery? For me, too. You know, as I've gone on and done my meditation practice, you know, more. But first, you know, I have this redwood tree in my backyard, and I put an elevator up the side and a chair on the top, and it's 150 feet in the air, and I'm isolated from the world, and that's where I did most of my Course in Miracles studying, right? But, you know, it's pretty, you know, remote. It's like in my little church. You know, it's easy. Just me and the birds, that's it. You know, it's great.
You put an elevator on the...
Yeah, I'm a mechanical kind of guy. Yeah, so it's really great. I'll show you a picture someday.
You love
it. So I literally ascend, you know. But then I became more interested because I could do it at work too. After a while, I went to Course in Miracles lessons, and you know, my mind was shifting, and I'd be in my marketing job in Silicon Valley, and I'm waiting for the meeting to start. And people are filing in, and I'm in my top of my tree, in my head. I'm in my little garden. And the peace is just, I love it. You fall in love with the sense of peace that you've gained. And so now the church, the experience of the church is everywhere I go. I've got this garden, we've called it here, this place in my mind, was facilitated by being in that church. I got to taste it, and it never left.
Could miracles and holiness be synonymous. Mm-hmm. Because miracle is not of the body. Mm-hmm. It's an expression of love. Mm-hmm. And usually when you're expressing love, pure love, mm-hmm. I mean unconditional love, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's really a holy moment, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed. And a miracle is a movement from the divisive split or material or small or hated or protected or defended.
So it can be something that we look at. It could be something that we encounter with someone else. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes.
It could be meditating and becoming your environment where you are the hills and the trees.
Sure.
There is no.
You feel it as one. Huh?
You're one with it.
Yeah. Sure.
It could be on page 387, paragraph 11. Maybe.
What are the chances?
Maybe.
What backwards?
Nice segue, I like that.
Pretty smooth, right? That's smooth.
Really?
Where are
we going? Yeah, we read this last week, but it's really appropriate.
11?
Because of what you just said. Yeah, paragraph 11.
This is
on 387.
Oh, my goodness.
Spent weeks on this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder, would we ever finish one? Could you ever pause?
Oh, I got the wrong book.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you got the right. I mean, it's the same book, but it's written a little differently. Let me share.
Oh, no.
It's written differently.
Yeah, there are 23 versions of A Course in Miracles possibly published. It's amazing.
Can I borrow one of yours?
But most of them, we use the foundation. You see that crowd. Paragraph 11. Because of what we just said. Sharon, would you read for us?
You have accepted this instead of your body.
So this is paragraph 11 on 387.
The other 11. Everyone has experienced what he could call a sense of being transported beyond himself. This feeling is liberating. Liberation far exceeds the dream of freedom. Sometimes hoped for in special relationships. It is a sense of actual escape from limitations. If you consider what this transportation really entails, you will realize that it is a sudden unawareness of the body and a joining of yourself in something else in which your mind enlarges to encompass it. Keep going.
Oh, yes.
Okay. It becomes part of you as you unite with it. And both become whole, as neither is perceived as separate. What really happens is that you are given up the illusion of limited awareness and lost your fear of union. The love that instantly replaces it extends to what has freed you and unites with it. And while this lasts, you are not uncertain of your identity and would not limit it. You have escaped from fear to peace, asking no questions of reality, but merely accepting it. You have accepted this instead of the body and have let yourself be one with something beyond it, simply by not letting your mind be limited by it.
Woo! Isn't that we've pretty much been dancing around this whole time?
Amen.
Amen. And so, Ben, would you read 12?
This can occur regardless of the physical distance that seems to be between you and what you join, of your respective positions in space, and of your difference in size and seeming quality. Time is not relevant. It can occur with something past, present, or anticipated. The something can be anything and anywhere, a sound, a sight, a thought, a memory, and even a general idea without a specific reference. Yet in every case you join it without reservation because you love it and would be with it. And so you rush to meet it, letting your limits melt away, suspending all the laws your body obeys and gently setting them aside.
So just like Chris was saying, you know, it actually could be anything, she says. Mm-hmm. It could be anything. Because you rush to meet it. Isn't that another description of something holy? You rush to meet it. Something in you feels not only invited, but connected.
Sounds like love.
Huh?
Sounds like love. You rush to meet it.
Sounds like love. Yeah. Of course, says that about love. It says love communicates with itself. It's love to love. And somebody else was saying, who was saying that you're in a conversation where that you seem to be working together on the same level and you're transcending both beyond yourself, beyond what you would say on your own, but you're both there and... Yes. Yes. Nice. Love's talking. The ego's gone. Beautiful. Beautiful. Turn to page... Turn back right 40 pages to page 360. And look at paragraph 11 on that page. And Kim, if you would you read that for us?
The holy instant is a miniature of heaven sent you from heaven. It is a picture too set in a frame. Yet, if you accept this gift, you will not see the frame at all, because the gift can only be accepted through your willingness to focus all of your attention on the picture.
Wow.
The holy instant is a miniature of eternity. It is a picture of timelessness set in a frame of time. If you focus on the picture, you will realize that it was only the frame that made you think it was a picture. Without the frame, the picture is seen as what it represents. For as the whole thought system of the ego lies in its gifts, so the whole of heaven lies in this instant, borrowed from eternity and set in time for you.
That's a shift in perception of this. This is actually everything.
Could be any religion. It's just the frame.
Yes, it's the frame of mind. It's the awakening in you, the awareness of the truth. And anything can be a trigger for that. Everything can be a trigger for that. Emptiness can be a trigger for that. Wholeness can be a trigger for that.
What are you talking about? The context.
Yes, okay, now the context, yes. Turns out the context is your mind. Mm-hmm. Correct. And from where your thoughts originate, they are informed. I said, from where your thoughts originate, they are informed. It is a law. Because cause and effect are not separate, you will experience that which you grow. This paragraph says it beautifully. The holy instant is a miniature of eternity. It's a picture of timelessness. Set in a frame of time, if you focus on the picture, you realize that it was only the frame that made you think it was a picture. This is really seeing. This is like, you know, they call them mystics. They put a name on these people who seem to be so wise they can see right through all the fretter and all the problems and see the essence of what's going on. Mystic see. It's just this. It's just this attunement to the holy versus the divisive, versus the competitive, versus the ego. Yeah. Yeah. It's a rising sense of perception of the truth. Draws you in rather than repulses you. You don't have to defend yourself from this. You go quickly, you run to meet it. Yes. 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 The whole thought system of the ego lies in its gifts. The ego's gifts. So the whole of heaven lies in this holy instant, borrowed from eternity, and set in time for you. You small little child, you. We'll give you this. We'll give you this. Take a lick. The first one's free. Okay, let's dig into tonight's reading. We're jumping ahead now to page 402.
Is this just off the top of your head, or are you just... Yeah.
Well, this one I have a bookmark for.
Okay.
Yes. That's where we were last week.
He's got the book memorized.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm working on it. So we're on paragraph 5. And, Chris, you're up. Would you read for us?
Any attempt to reinterpret sin as error is always indefensible to the ego. The idea of sin is wholly sacrosanct to its thought system and quite unapproachable except with reverence and awe. It is the most holy concept of the ego system, lovely and powerful, wholly true, and necessarily protected with every defense at its disposal. For here lies its best defense, which all the others serve. Here is its mirror, here is its armor, its protection, and the fundamental purpose of the special relationship in its interpretation.
Thank you. Okay, so first we have, you're going against the protected idea of the ego that harm and guilt is actually not only true, but it's really smart to see it and then penalize for it to separate the good from the bad. This is how you judge properly. And if a sin's involved, you really hit them hard. Dissociate, punish, the whole bit. It makes you really safe, and it sets an example for those who would follow if you beat the living tar out of that sinner. You know, it's good. It's good for them.
Miracles, right?
What?
This is A Course in Miracles.
Yeah. A Course in Miracles. You use the book and you beat them over the head as hard as you can. Yeah, this is the essence of the world we live in, and from the world's perspective, it really makes some sense. You know, take that dirty sinner, the guilty bastard, and first do some punishing, and then lock him up. Let it be example to others to not follow. And you're really doing a good thing for everybody. And now make something good out of something very bad. It makes some sense, doesn't it? You know.
Seems like that next chapter says that. I know the next paragraph of me talks about that.
Yes.
Yeah. That's good.
So often it does. And so, now, for us to go against that, we cannot be describing... Now, the laws of the world, because you'll lose every time. The world has very specific laws, you know, gravity, time, age, money, all the blood needs to stay, your blood should stay on the inside of your body, see? This is one of these laws of the world. You go against these things, you're going to lose every single time. So that's why this is actually a spiritual journey. We know the laws of the world, you can respect that well enough, but they didn't end satisfying. Even though you got all the blood on the inside, it's a good job for you. You got enough money to make it through the day, the week, the month, the year, maybe the rest of your life. Good for you. But that's something missing. That's why we're here. We need to look at the laws that are applying to our mind. And what are the laws that we've borrowed from the world and applied to our mind inappropriately is this idea of sin. Sin, the idea that you could do something wrong and it's not forgivable. That's sin. You make mistakes, okay? Everybody makes mistakes. But if you make one of those mistakes you shouldn't have done, I'm not letting you go on that one. Nobody should do that. This now is a category of loss that has the same power of holiness to release does sin have to damn. It's the anti-holiness. The anti-holiness. And we reserve this in our little hearts. There are some things, no, shouldn't do. That particular person, That particular historical event, that particular weapon should never be owned by anybody or used. That's just sinful.
So what's penance?
Penance is a term from the Catholic Church, but we're not going to go into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever the priest says it is.
I'll tell you later.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you later.
Five Hail Marys and a...
Yeah, whatever the priest says
pay
it
for it.
Is.
Penance is you pay up.
Yeah, it's your balance sheet.
Yeah, we're gonna talk to God for you. As long as you do these things, we'll report it upstairs.
It's a sliding scale.
Yeah, and we'll give you some credit. And maybe you won't be punished if you do all of this stuff. We'll see, because maybe you're not telling us the whole story. But you do penance for what you did tell us. You got a chance. And then you go to this little booth inside the church, and it's for confession. You just burp out the rest. It's good for your soul.
It's all related to sin, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Related to sin.
What's the Aramaic word for sin mistake?
Yep.
That would have been a whole lot better knowing that growing up than
yep.
sin.
So what was it called?
The true translation of sin is just a mistake. A mistake. That's it.
It's an archery term. You missed the target. Now you sinned by about 3 inches. Let's move a little more to the left.
Yeah. Just otherwise,
a little more practice.
Yeah. Otherwise, just try again yeah. instead of like you'll be damned for that. Would be really helpful. Like 40 years
away control.
Okay, so any attempt to reinterpret sin as error is always indefensible to the ego. The idea of sin is wholly sacrosanct to the ego's thought system, quite unapproachable, except with reverence and awe. Sin is the most, quote, holy concept in the ego's system. Like I say, it's the ego's holiness. It has the power, like holiness has to lift you to heaven, and with this experience we've all just described in 387 spelled out for us, as holiness is that experience, sin is the opposite. To actually drain you of your privilege. Just ignore that.
Is that me?
No, it's me.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Too
shaken. That's my phone's quiet mode.
Is it gonna stop?
Is that quiet?
Okay.
Okay.
We'll forgive you that sin.
Thank you. Please forgive me.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the most holy concept in the ego system. Lovely and powerful, holy, true, and necessarily protected with every defense at the ego's disposal is the idea that you can make a mistake that's unforgivable, you deserve punishment, and you are now not privileged forever. Stay in a body, do your penance, try to find enough penance to scrub your soul clean if you can, says the ego. Loves it. Makes the whole world out of it. Yep.
What? Why? Because because the ego can feel better that it's not doing it?
Because now there's a way to judge somebody good and bad, for sure.
So it's others. Can make an other from that.
Oh, and make me better than you.
Okay.
I never sinned like that. You guys know what she did? Does everybody know what Sharon did?
Okay.
Oh, my
God.
Cool.
Putting birds in cages. Putting labels. Labels is another thing. Coach talks about that too.
Based on your judgment.
Yeah, it gives you permission to judge, and it makes you okay. If you guys know what she did, whoa. I mean, they did let her out, okay, after a while. But judgment wants to grab a hold and decide now, put boundaries on her and me, and can we associate, and all sorts of flavors come in. Judgment is permitted.
And sometimes we damn ourselves.
When you let your children around her, oh my God.
I was thinking, like, this is the most profound, the most profound trick or whatever of the ego.
Nice.
But is it also just so present in all these diluted forms?
Yes.
Like assigning anything meaning
yes.
is the same
That's it. You're on it. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm going. Thank you very much. Thank you. The Course says that when you put a name on something, you've now limited your experience of it.
You besmirched it.
Are you serious? Yeah. Now you've removed yourself from the experience of it just by a name. Just by the name.
Huh? That's what Mark said. When he said, you know, you try to define it.
Yeah. Immediately you limit it. And you bet. And so, one night we had the most extreme example of that when we found a gun in here, a live gun. It was sitting over on the... And, you know, I came in the room, and it was in the middle of the floor, people were like, ah! It was a real gun. And
sacred object.
And so you remember that you were here for that, were you?
No, a long time ago.
We had a big discussion about now we could use, you know, how much judgments are automatically pre-built and what a wall we have to climb. And one person could appreciate the gun as, you know, it's actually a collector's item. That's from the days of the settlers. That's probably from the 1800s, he says. Another person's Mario's here, and he's custom. He's custom fine metals because of his work. And he says, you know, you can't just make gun out of any kind of metal. It's got to be a good quality metal. That. And somebody else says, no, that's designed for death and nothing but killing. What are you guys talking about? We're not even safe here in the room. What if it goes off? You know. And so we had all these flavors and all these different ideas of what it was. Somebody else says, I think this was me, can I sell it on eBay? I think I can make, you know...
$2
Yeah, $2 on that. You know, if nobody's going to claim it, I'll... So it's all in your head. And so lesson number 2 came up, which is I give everything I see, all the meaning it has, for me, including holiness.
So how do I... In the case of the gun, how do I break that? Because there's a whole bunch of stuff going on with that. So
yep.
How do you break that?
It's an inner disarmament in your own mind, not an outer disarmament.
Okay.
That's how you do it. You do it by catching your attack box.
Okay.
Your personal attack box.
Okay. Just let it be.
Oh, yeah. Well, let it. You're going to fight all the guns?
No.
Big job.
I'm just like, it's a gun, just put it over there, and we'll keep our discussion going.
That's right. The harm is when you bring it inside your mind, which is the reverse miracle. You actually bring the fear of the gun and what it might do and what's happening and how it's there, you know, inside your mind, and then fear rises. Yes. And then you become fearful and willing to attack to preserve yourself. All these things happen when you bring the gun inside. Okay. And the way we do it very specifically... And that's what the workbook is in A Course in Miracles, is to let you see all the arming and attacking that you do throughout the day. And all the lessons are there to help you bring you into an awakening to your own self-attack.
So how does attack... So I can relate... The way I relate to it is like when I label something, it's a strategy to protect myself somehow. Mm-hmm. Like so that I can feel better about something. So that's arming.
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's defending.
Defending. Okay.
Yeah. The smarter you are, the more wealthy you are, the more healthy you are, the taller you are, on and on, the more defended you are. And the safer you feel. Here, and those are good laws here, but they're very false when it comes to what you really are. In fact, they're blocking you from being open and experiencing, like we talked about at the beginning of the meeting, what you really are. Yeah. Very good. Yes.
Because in that instance, you're only viewing it with your human experience.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice,
you're only
nice.
These eyes, it's sight, not vision. It's like, so you have this association with that cup, pencil, door, room, gun, whatever, that you've only experienced, and that there's that lack of, I don't know what this is for.
Nicely said. You're only experiencing it from the perspective of your body. That's page 388, paragraph 1.
Oh, we're close.
Keep your finger here, though, because we're coming back.
388?
I think so. I'm a little blurry on this one.
That's, oh, my God, I need to do nothing right there.
Yeah, that's probably it. 388.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, let's read those first two paragraphs, just right on Pam's point. Donna.
This is under I need you nothing.
Yes, please.
You still have too much faith in the body as a source of strength. What plans do you make that do not involve its comfort or protection or enjoyment in some way? This makes up the body an end and not a means in your interpretation. And this always means you still find sin attractive. Mm-hmm. No one accepts atonement for himself who still accepts sin as his goal.
In the Course in Miracles, when you see the word sin, you can substitute the word separation. Because in the Course's teaching, the only sin, if there was one, is that you would follow separation and make it real. Separation from what? Separation from the One. Separation from love. Separation from God. Separation from truth. You're squirreling yourself off into some false fantasy where love and God is not included. In fact, nobody else is included. Kind of very alone. So that's what sin is to A Course in Miracles. It's this whole ego trip. Yeah. So please back up one sentence and read it and substitute that word sin in your mind.
You have thus... Oh, read it again?
Yeah, sure. Start over again.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Page one.
Okay. You still have too much faith in the body as a source of strength. What plans do you make that do not involve its comfort or protection or enjoyment in some way? This makes the body an end and not a means in your interpretation. And this always means you still find separation attractive.
Yeah, thank you, Donna.
No one accepts atonement for himself who still accepts separation as his goal. You have thus not met your one responsibility. Atonement is not welcomed by those who prefer pain and destruction.
Doesn't that speak right to your heart and your mind at the same time? Masako, next paragraph?
I guess.
Okay, Mark?
There is one thing that you have never done. You have not utterly forgotten the body. It has perhaps faded at times from your sight, but it has not yet completely disappeared. You are not asked to let this happen for more than an instant, yet it is an instant that the miracle of atonement happens. Afterwards, you will see the body again, but never quite the same. And every instant that you spend without awareness of it gives you a different view of it when you return.
And then, Mark, would you please read one more sentence in paragraph 3?
At no single instant does the body exist at all.
What? Whoa! Oh, my God, what is this?
Wait a minute. I can see through.
But this is absolutely right. This is the metaphysics of A Course in Miracles and of enlightenment. This is the essence of how powerful the presence is. Remember you said present? Somebody here said you fall into the present. A couple people did. In the presence of holiness, it just time kind of disappears. Yeah, read the next sentence.
It is always remembered or anticipated, but never experienced, just now.
Ha, that's like what the workbook talks about in the first couple of lessons. It's going to shake you up and say, you are so preoccupied with past thoughts. You see nothing as it is right now. You put labels on it, judgments on it, preferences on it, and you completely are not just with it now. Let's take an example of this cup in front of you, or this pencil with bite marks in it. Have any problems with that? You just can't be present. So it busts the ego in just this way. Good. Thanks, Pam. Good trip into the body work. Okay, so back to page 403 now. And paragraph, top of the page, sentence 3, paragraph 5, that this idea of separation, it's the most holy concept in the ego system. It's lovely and powerful, holy, true, and necessarily protected, with every defense at the ego's disposal, because the ego is a manifestation of separation. The ego's the star of separation. It's the chief player. All the lights and all the money and all the food go to the protection development of your ego in body form. Your own body is your favorite ego.
What?
Your own body.
Oh.
That's your favorite ego. Your own body.
That's a lot of shit.
Yeah. in chapter 20. In chapter 27, it calls your body is the hero of the dream. Hmm. You're the hero of the dream. It is your body. For here, with this idea of separation, see, believed, bought, worshipped, maintained, defended, respected, revered, like holiness is revered, in those few instances we talked about, is separation respected. This is Sharon. Those are her pillows and her clothes and her space. This is Andrew. What? This is Andrew, and this is my space and my clothes and my stuff. Okay, David's over there. We all have our beds at home that are just right. You know, our rooms inside of our houses, behind our doors or our dresser, with our drawer. Misako, just put your stuff in my drawer, says Mark. Everything else is fine, but this is my stuff. Yeah, you know, this is kind of natural here. It is a part and parcel of what maintains separation is the defending of it that we do automatically. That's why I say the ego is very drunk. It's drunk like an alcoholic is drunk on alcohol. Now the alcohol is talking. The alcohol is behaving. Is the alcohol takes the next drink. Mm. And so it is with the ego. And separation and all the laws that maintain separation. This is what we're undoing with A Course in Miracles, so that your church experience, your holiness experience, is inside your head all the time. I'm waking that up.
So the most amazing thing ever to me, the idea of being so much in a body in this world, and that something can actually change. How important that is, that the whole point of identity, of at some point, what am I, who I am, sets in motion something. And the idea that the whole universe is working with me, but the idea at some point it takes a leap of faith. I'm going to have to believe that I might be something beside the body, even though it doesn't appear to be the evidence.
And when that thought occurs on you, it blows apart the rationale that you actually are only a body. 387 paragraph 11, we just read it. It says it's this transportation of sorts. You know, it's using these loose words, but everybody's experienced this type of transportation. He says what's really happening is for a moment you've actually allowed yourself to go beyond the limit of the body. Once you do, and most of us in here know this, once you've taken this particular step, there is no going back, is there?
And a sense from then on, a sense of where is this coming from? Where is this thought originating?
Yes. Yes.
You have a taste.
A taste of this reality.
That holy thought reality.
Yes, and this power that is beyond all the other powers I was investing in before. Once I've tasted it, once you've experienced that otherworldliness thing, all things have to be measured against that now. Mm-hmm. It raised the bar. You were transported beyond. And once you tasted that...
No matter what the world does, it's not good enough.
That's the cost of A Course in Miracles now. Everything else has got kind of a brown color to it.
And I haven't given the answer to this.
Yes.
So there's no pretending that I don't have any kind of clue beyond. I don't really know, but I have a teacher... trusted teachers. It's very, very different. And there really is no going back to... And that's a beautiful thing.
Yes.
It's the same thing as like in Buddhism where they refer talk about awakening.
Yes.
You know, it's like there's, you know, being... It's like people think they have to study for years and years and years to get to this point where they are awake. But awakening is just that glimpse.
Yes.
So then when you see it, you're awake, right?
That's right.
And then you can't go back because you've seen the other side.
Yes. Yes. Reality has that effect, like if you put a single drop of black coloring in some white paint, it's no longer fully white.
Right.
It's got some other colors now introduced. Even though maybe you can't see it when it's all mixed, it's there. And the color is working its way through. And more color changes and changes.
So I'm so glad I was wrong.
Yes,
I'm so glad I'm wrong. Yes. But I thought, no, that doesn't exist. This is real. I'm 100% sure.
Yes.
I'll put all the guards against it. Yes. And then to be like wrong at that, to go like, whoa, I want my identity as God.
I'm so glad I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Course in Miracles has that exact phrase in here. Mm-hmm. Aren't you glad you were wrong about being stuck in a body as a limited thing that just lives long enough to die? Aren't you glad that isn't the truth?
It actually has that sentence. I wish I could pinpoint the time when I actually got that.
Because
be nice to mark it on my calendar.
Don't worry.
But
yeah, there are other moments that come and you'll say that.
You know what I was thinking is even though we know what we know, it still comes and goes.
Yes. You know how
it does.
You know, great way to describe this in India. The way they make their cloths, you know, they beautiful deep colors they have. You've seen these saris that they wear, and mm-hmm. yeah. Well, you know, not so sophisticated with synthetic dyes and stuff that we have. They what they do is they take their dyes, which are ground up metals and stuff like that, and pieces of plants, and they make it very very pure as they can, and they put it all over the cloth, and then they take the cloth over to the river and they just wash it out, and then they put it in the sun, and for a little while it's really colorful, but the sun just bakes off all of the natural plant-based dyes and the weaker stuff. And the cloth is just barely blue now. It's got a hint of blue a little bit. It was really blue. The exposure was strong when they first dumped the stuff on it, smeared it around, and then it went off. And they take the same piece of cloth, bring it back over to the shop, and rub more of this stuff on it, and they lay it out in the sun again, and it gets a little more blue. But you know what? The first blue plus the second blue. The first blue never went away. Even though the thing started to wash and look white again, the person who was working it knows, I'm building something here. Mm-hmm. I have retained the color deeply in the fabric with the first one, less deep in the fabric in the second one. The molecules are binding and combining. And by the last wash, it's so blue. And you wash it off in the river and you set the sun on it, and the sun bakes it for 2-3 days and it's just blue. And it's blue forever. The color now, the exposure now, the enlightenment. Yes, it was blue the first time. Yes, it was enlightening the first time. That's absolutely the holy instant is complete in its experience in that moment. We like to call it an instant here. And the more exposure you have to this, the greater and stronger and trusted and aware we become. Pretty soon you start to figure out that, in the case of our enlightenment, the addition of spirit did not actually come from the outside. It didn't come from the book. It didn't come from going somewhere. It didn't come from counting the beads. It didn't come from outside at all. It was an opening on the inside and an overflowing from the source of all. It's actually on what you would call the inside. Of course calls it, so does the Bible, closer to you than your breath. Or than your heart. It says it 2 ways. Closer to you than your own heart. Is this enlightenment that you seem to be seeking?
It also says that we are the thing that we seek.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Lesson 318.
It's already there.
Yes. Yes, it's already there. It is denied. It is hidden over. It is blocked. Intentionally so. And not for all the nefarious reasons that we might guess. But the effect is that we've moved away from the fire and we're getting a bit cold now, a bit chilly. The Course says, look, all you got to do is go back toward the heat and you're going to feel better. That's exactly right. Good. Thank you.
Could I just ask
a
question? I wonder when you're saying this, because sometimes I've experienced that when this breakthrough point is the strongest, then it seems like the backwash gets stronger.
Yes.
And so I wonder, is there a competing process with the ego? I mean, we're talking about building up these layers, because that, you know, in one thing we read tonight, it says the ego's fear of union. So I just, if I understood better the mechanism of how this competing
excellent, Donna.
Then it would really help me more than listening to this, because I experience this quite often, going from that one pull, and then there's this backwash.
Absolutely. It's like a pendulum swinging.
Yes.
You push it all up in one side, and there's just this force now to bring it back the other side, even though good things were. God, it was so great. I had it, and I lost it, and now things are worse than ever than before. I got news for you. I got good news and bad news. I don't know what you... Well, they're actually both the same.
What do you want to hear first?
What do you want to hear? Yeah. So the good news is that in order for you to fully experience the ego, you do have to step out of it. Okay? And so that's the good news and the bad news. Congratulations, you stepped out of it, and there's hope. Maybe some light... this has occurred in your life after so long, and finally hope returned and things were looking up. Oh, finally. Okay, nobody can take that away. Nobody can take away these experiences of holiness, these enlightenments that we have, enlightenment experiences we have. Nobody can take those away. However, the world, just like, you know, the waves behind a boat close over the track of the boat. The wake behind the boat, you can really see where the boat was as it's moving along, but pretty soon the water just erases that the boat was ever there. This is the same thing with the world. The world, we're so drunk, Donna, on our separate identity. But you can't thoroughly erase the experience of holiness, of love, of openness, of freedom, when once it occurs. As dark as your life may have been, as soon as that light shows up, wow, it was light. And that you get to keep, like a little bit of blue dye in the cloth, it is kept. And now you are closer forever. You are closer to more of that freedom. Now it's a matter of moving yourself, regardless of what the world does, to close over your tracks of holiness with unholiness and what the world always does on its own. It's up to you now to remember and to bring yourself back to a state. We call it meditation. We call it, you know, doing your workbook lesson for the day. We call it just taking count to 10 before you speak. It's a great way to start. It's a great way to invite the Holy Spirit in. If you just quiet your ego down while you're counting to 10, somewhere around 7 or so, the Holy Spirit has a chance to be felt again.
So you mean I have to be patient?
Damn! I don't have time to be patient.
But once it happens, it basically tells you it's possible. And that changes everything.
Yes, because
until then, you don't know if it's possible.
You don't know.
Yeah. The minute you have it, it then makes you aware that this is not the only way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yes, you've been reborn, right?
Reborn.
And if there's really time as a construct that isn't real, then those instances are always with you. And that's what you're saying too, isn't it?
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
And that is actually the truth, and this other experience of fear and anxiety guises it.
Exactly. Covers it over. We call it the blocks to the... This is page one now, Course in Miracles. The blocks to the awareness of love's presence. That's how the book starts. It says, we're going to help you remove the block. We're not going to do anything about love. Love is... That's the good news. Love is all the time, everywhere. Bad news, you're really, really, really good at blocking it.
I just wanted to take that pendulum metaphor for a minute, because I had this in a meditation once. I just felt like I was swinging all over the place. And then I suddenly realized, if you just climb up towards the fulcrum point, like the higher that you climb, the less that's going to feel like a swing. And I feel like I've seen that in my own life. The thing's still doing this, but I'm up here, so it doesn't feel like that much anymore. And eventually, maybe none.
I like this, Julie. Excellent. Really excellent movement on that analogy.
Really good. It's like the Dharma wheel, too, where you're flopping around in the mud, and you're going up, and you're flopping around in the mud again. If you go to the center of the wheel, you're just watching it. Same.
Nice.
Good idea.
Yeah, the course has a section called Above the Battleground, and it has this discussion, describes this, where you've got the fray going on in the battleground, but above you can see both sides and appreciate, and those shadows you can see. You can now be impassioned. Whereas when you're on the battleground defending yourself, the hell with that.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really good meditation.
Yes.
Putting yourself above the battleground.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And then it makes you get anything come, not be afraid of it.
You don't talk enough. Speak up.
And the Buddhist tradition, too, is when someone becomes enlightened, the whole world becomes enlightened. You know? And that there's no this patriarch, then this patriarch, and this patriarch through time. It's all a piece. So this patriarch here and that one that's going to be what we think is out 200 years, they're all the...
We're not, our projection changes, huh?
Because it's all your world.
The projection changes.
The projection changes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Good point. Okay, let's have a circle. Take a deep breath. So either it is or it isn't, folks. It either it is or it isn't. Holiness is all the time. Everywhere, or it isn't. And this is a disastrous game we're playing on ourselves, even holding hands in a circle pretending that we're together. Even the idea that there's some positive hope, either that, if holiness isn't, then nothing, none of that is. But I heard tonight from so many sources, people who ran out of words, and you could feel it and see it on their face, that there's something beyond that is greater. Something that goes beyond the limit that we're so addicted to. And now you're holding hands with somebody else who says, I know it's true, and that's exactly where I'm going. My dedication is to holiness. We have completed the circle. Let that be a reminder of how joined you are in truth. Follow that idea for holiness, and it will build like you're dyeing blue into a white cloth. Every time you touch and allow yourself to afford the idea of connection, the idea that there is a greatness and a love from which you come and to which you go by no choice of your own, it's inevitable. Every time you touch that embrace of holiness, you become more colored with the spirit yourself. So let's dye it. Let's dye ourselves in spirit. thank you. Amen.
Thank you. That was good. Well, we had to
shake hands, but we missed each other. Oh, you take my song. That's about what I got. That got me.
Nice to see you.
Thank you. Meet you, I guess, Chris.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too.
I would love to meet you, too. Yeah.